Easter egg hunt immediately following services. Then the big day for the ladies, not for me, but April 7th, 10 to 1 is the ladies' day, and I know that's been a blessing to my wife. And then there's a spring retreat with the focus being unclear, and that's, yeah, April 20th through 22nd. So I've asked Robert Copeland to open us with a prayer. So the vision implementation team has been reviewing the ministries that the church is involved in. And one ministry that they looked at specifically was life groups. So the facts on current life group involvement, this isn't pleasant, but it is what it is. Currently we have 3 groups meeting. 30% of the leadership participate in a life group, and only 17% of the members participate in a life group. So the vision implementation team said, okay, this is an issue. They put together a committee. That committee consisted of myself, Carla Welty, the Fullers, the Sandovals, the Myers, and the Scarboroughs. I just want to commend that committee because they were great to work with. A lot of good things came through that. So the first question we asked was, is this a necessary, viable ministry, or is this something that's run its course and we need to do something different? And we as a committee came to the unanimous decision that it's a worthwhile ministry and it should definitely be pursued. We talked about what the purpose and the vision of that ministry is, and it's to develop closer relationships with our brothers and sisters in Christ to strengthen the entire church. Then we looked at facts. We went out and we wanted to analyze what's going on with our life groups, what's going on with other churches and their successful small groups. And so then we set out to build a comprehensive plan, if you will. And that plan was developed. It was presented to the vision implementation team as well as the elders. So everybody has looked at it and the elders have given their blessing. So this is more fun with slides, so I apologize. But the first question is why? Why do we need life groups? We have some societal reasons. The General Social Survey is a survey that's been run by the University of Chicago and the National Foundation for the Sciences since 1972. And they survey the American public year after year after year to look at their character, their characteristics, and their attitudes. So in the course of that study, one of the questions they ask is, how many close friends do you have? And do you know what the most common answer was? None. Zero was the most common answer. So there's a whole bunch of people walking around without a confidant. So social isolation is a growing epidemic. It's recognized as having dire physical, mental, and emotional consequences. And since the 1980s, the percentage of American adults who say they're lonely has doubled from 20 to 40%. Being lonely can kill you. Medical news today, premature death by up to 50% is the risk increase. BYU studied 3.7 million adults, and they found you're twice as likely to die from heart disease as those with a solid social circle. And then this one I thought was a joke. The British have found loneliness to be such an issue, they have appointed a minister of loneliness to head up the daunting task of figuring out solutions to what the U.S. Surgeon General calls the most common pathology in America. It's not a joke. At a national level, they appointed a minister of loneliness. And so then we look at that's what society says. That's your scientific facts, if you will. Then we look at what does God say? What does he have to say about it? And we know in Genesis 2:18, he said, "It is not good for the man to be alone." And of course, he said this in the context of marriage, but it speaks to a fundamental truth. And keep in mind, he said this before the fall of man. So when things were perfect in the Garden of Eden, God said, it's not good for man to be alone, recognizing that man needs that companionship. Oh, wow, I even got my notes. Okay, and so then we have Jesus. Jesus didn't need a community. He didn't need those relations. We know that he could have done it by himself. He's an all-powerful being. But he chose this motley crew of 12 men to help him. And he loved them. He taught them. He poured himself into these relationships with them. And if you think about it, he created that first small group of 12 men. And then, just finished teaching a class on this. There are 59 one another commands in the New Testament. They're mentioned over 150 times. Obviously, you can't do one another by yourself, right? It's not going to happen. So the conclusion is people need people. And as you look at people needing people, then you can look at what science says. And the University of Texas, Dr. Umberson, her big point is emotional support is just one of a dozen ways friends may safeguard your health and extend your life. And then this Dr. Dunbar from the University of Oxford has done extensive studies on your circle of friends and how you maintain different relationships. She says your 15 closest relationships are most crucial when it comes to your mental and physical health. And they say you need at least 3 to 5 close friends, which, remember, the Americans said 0. We need 3 of 5 of them to be at an optimal well-being, if you will. So we know that people need people, but what kind of people? So one of my favorite quotes is by Jim Rohn. Says, you are the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. And I've found that to be true. So then scripture, let's see if I can figure this out here. Sorry. Okay, so then scripture has a little bit to say about it too. And this is just 3 pieces I pulled from. 1 Corinthians 15:33, the one we used with our kids all the time. Do not be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. Proverbs, walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. And then in Ecclesiastes, the wisest man who ever lived. Though one may be overpowered, 2 can defend themselves. A cord of 3 strands is not quickly broken. So when you're thinking about we need people, and what kind of people do we need? We as a group have said our vision is to be a people shaped in the image of Jesus Christ. And so if you think about these 5 friends that have this influence over you, if you think about that circle, we spend a very little amount of time at church. We spend a very little amount of time with friends from church. We are at work for 40 hours a week with a whole group of people that we don't know what's going on necessarily there. So we've got some questionable influences going on. And we've said we want to be shaped into the image of Jesus Christ. And so the point is that we really... I may have to go get a tutorial on this real quick. We really need each other. And I went a long way around to make that point, but the reality is that we have to have each other to make this work. And so the question then is, what is the answer? And this is our first video.
A more traditional church. In a traditional church, the church is more building-centered. In a small group church, it's more people-centered. In other words, in a traditional setting, everything centers around what happens in that building. In a church that emphasizes small groups, what you're trying to do is empower the members to do the work. It's really a biblical model. Acts 20, verse 20, you know the idea there. The church met in the temple courts, and they also met from house to house. Because the real ministry relationally is going to happen in those house-to-house meetings. Now, the next comparison would be a traditional church is more what I call Sunday-centered, and a small group church is more everyday-centered. In other words, the big shebang is what happens on that hour on Sunday morning, where what we really want is the big emphasis is how do I live my life every day, what I do with what I'm learning. Then a traditional church, I would say it's more preacher-centered. You've got one guy up lecturing everybody else. Now, don't get me wrong. I think that's a pretty good idea. But I don't think that's enough. I think you need that dynamic big assembly, but you also need that small group meeting that's everyday centered that says, okay, what do you do with this in your life? What does this mean Monday morning when you go to work or you go to school or you're there in your neighborhood? And so I think that's a major difference. Also, I think in a traditional setting, and you as a church leader will understand this, we shepherd by list. In other words, I know what we have at our church. We have a computer list we can print out every week that will tell you who was there and who wasn't there, who missed 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and we try to follow up with those people. But I'd be honest, we're not very effective that way. You know, you don't get a lot done calling somebody and say, well, you showed up on our computer list. You haven't been in church in 4 weeks. But if you have people in a small group, meeting in a living room, what I say is you shepherd face-to-face. In other words, if there's 10 people every Sunday night in my living room and somebody doesn't show up for that, well, it's just as natural as breathing for me to call them or probably for them to call me and say, you know, we're sorry, we're sick or we're out of town or we're struggling a little bit. So you begin to shepherd people in a much more relational way, which obviously is going to lead to better results. I think as a leader in a church, that's going to be one of the most encouraging things to you, is that trying to take care of the church, you can do it through these life groups. And then the last comparison, in a traditional church, the staff does the majority of the work, and we just keep hiring people to do the work. Well, I appreciate us doing that, but I think in a small group church, the staff's role changes in that the staff now trains and equips and motivates and models for the members, so the members go out and do the work. In other words, we like to say at Landmark that we don't have, you know, a staff of 7 or 8 ministers. We have 1,000 ministers. And I think that's the biblical idea of the priesthood of believers, that everybody is a minister. There's no clergy laity. Now, we can say that all we want, but until we empower our members to do the work, it's just, you know, sort of a sounding gong, you know, it's just theology. And so in this idea, the members are equipped to go out in all of these groups and to take care of each other and to apply the word and to build those relationships that are going to make a difference. So I think it's an exciting thing as we reestablish that idea biblically of everybody being a minister. So I hope you can see from that comparison sort of the big picture of this thing and what it can mean in your church. Now, if you were to interview the elders of our church here, I think they would tell you, even though I'll be honest, when we started this a few years ago, they were quite leery. They had never been a part of a small group church. They knew they'd take some flack about not having a traditional Sunday night service with everybody excuse me, being there. But if you interview them now, I think they'd say to you, this is how we do church. And this is how we've grown as a church. And it's how we're able to take care of people. And so many questions that come up, it's really how we handle it.
What is a life group?
So I should have introduced him. His name is Buddy Bell. He is a preacher at the Landmark Church of Christ in Alabama. Landmark has over 1,000 members. They have 65 active groups. They've been doing small groups since the late 90s. So as a committee, we said we need to identify some things that are super important. We need to identify the things that we would call our core ideas. And the first one was the purpose of the groups: connect with God, connect with one another, and connect with our neighbors. And I'm going to come back to that in a little bit of, because I want to spend a little more time on that. All members are encouraged to participate in one connect group. Each group is responsible for the coordination and execution of their meeting. And as such, they should feel free to determine how often they want to meet. We're going to recommend that you meet every week, a minimum of 2 times a month. They get to determine when they meet. Sunday afternoons and evenings is being encouraged. That's the time set aside for these groups. What they do together, the groups can decide that, but fellowship, Bible study, and prayer are the foundations of small groups. That's what it's all about. And then what they study. Different groups will be studying slightly different things. In the beginning, we're going to be encouraging everyone to do a sermon-based curriculum. Take what's said in the sermon in the mornings, talk about it as a group, and see how you can apply it on Monday morning. The idea is to apply it in your everyday life. So Sunday afternoons and evenings, the times reserved for connect groups at various locations and times. There will be a group meeting at the church. All groups will have communion sets so that if you weren't able to participate in the morning, it's available to you in the evening. But there will be a group meeting here, and they'll determine exactly what that looks like in the evenings. Group events won't conflict with church-wide activities. You know, Mike Meyer was on the committee, and he was like, whatever you do, make sure they know they can't meet on VBS. VBS starts on a Sunday night this year. So, as a church, we're going to try to get much, much better about communicating consistently what's going on with Connect Groups. We're going to try to put it up on the web. We're going to put it on the walls. We're going to put it in classrooms. We're going to put it on the slides before, so that you know what's offered and who's meeting and what they're doing. As a church, we want to make sure this ministry is inclusive. One of the things we talked about was Connect Groups aren't always conducive to everybody, and so how can we be inclusive of all the different needs in our church? And that's something we'll be working through, and we definitely want suggestions, and we look for your help on. And some of those we talked about. I didn't know there was a large group that doesn't drive after dark. I got educated. Apparently that's in my future from what I was told in the group. But it wasn't always a positive group. Shut-ins. How can we use these groups to visit shut-ins and to include them? And then whatever special needs are out there. And then a big point of this is the groups aren't just inward-focused groups. These groups should be used as outreach. And if you think about it, we'll talk about this more in a minute, but it's much easier to get somebody to come over for dinner than it is to get somebody to come to Sunday morning services with you. And so these groups should be used for outreach. It's not helping me. Okay, so apparently I locked the computer up. I am on a roll here. So let me find... So connect groups. Connecting with God, with one neighbor, with one another, and with our neighbors. And so I wanted to take just a minute to talk about how that looks. Remember, these groups are going to be involved in Bible study. So that's all about, what is the character of God? What is God's relationship to his people? How does God interact with his people? We're a people that believe in the power of prayer. We believe that God will act on our... So we want these groups to focus on prayer and get answered all kinds of interesting ways. And then through other group members, and this is one that I didn't necessarily have, different behaviors that have been modeled in the groups that I've been in the last 2 or 3 years. And when I look at the way they carry themselves, it's had a huge influence on, that's how we connect with God, and in our fellow members are an example of that. We connect with one another through the fellowship. You just can't put enough emphasis on spending time together and doing things together. There's just some relationships that need that time to build. And so through the fellowship, and then through Bible study, you learn what your fellow members feel on different topics, how they see the scripture. You learn from them. And then through prayer again, because we're learning what each other's needs are, and we're talking about them at a deep level. And then the final way is to connect with our neighbors. And I'm going to let Buddy handle this one, but just listen to what he has to say. It's video 4, I think.
They go, well, you know, we go to this life group tonight. You were over at Ed's house, and would you come? And so their friend comes. Now, the friend's a little bit leery because he's maybe been to church before. Most people have. Or he has a bad perception about church. He thinks they're a bunch of hypocrites or judgmental people, you know, or holier than thou. Then he comes to this life group, probably a little bit nervous. I mean, he's sitting around a circle. You got to look at people. Most everybody's talking. But he begins to notice. These folks are real people with real problems, just like me. But there's a real difference. They've got a real Lord, okay? And he begins to watch them pray about things, and God answer prayers, and someone share a problem, and someone else say, yeah, I've been there, let me help you. He begins to hear enough problems that he says, what? You know what? I might fit into this church. These people have problems like me. And he begins to hear this. And so, you know, he begins to come with this new Christian to church and to life group. And, you know, you don't sit there and try to zero in him on the life group, you know, and ask him what he's going to do about his soul. That's not the purpose. The purpose is for him to watch the love of God and be convicted.
So if you heard the last part he said there, for them to see the love of God and be convicted, and I really believe that that's what life groups have done for me. Seeing other people, seeing that they struggle as well, seeing their victories, seeing their defeats, working through it together, supporting each other, those things have been usually beneficial to me and even to my children when we can get them to pay attention. But, you know, it is a group that together can accomplish a lot. And so there's two main goals of life group or connect group. Sorry. Want to keep it real simple. The members that are in that group are growing and serving. This isn't a stagnant group. It's not a hangout hour. It's about growing and serving more and more. And then connect groups need to be multiplying. They need to be bringing people in and getting them comfortable with sharing with other Christians at a real life level, and then multiplying and going out, because the optimal small group is between 10 to 15 people tops. If you get bigger than that, it's hard for people to have to get to discuss what's going on. It just doesn't work super well. We've been fortunate. I was part of the what's now the Myers Montgomery group, and that group got to the point that one night at my house we had 38 people. And so it was time to multiply that group. And so then went with the Fries and the Copelands and the Sandovals and the Revels, and then the Coles joined. And now that group's gotten to a size that it needs to multiply. And so that is one of the key goals to what's going on. So what can you expect? I just can't say it enough. It's a transforming experience if you do it right. If you are really open and honest, and I'm not saying walk in there and bear your burdens. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is over time you become more and more comfortable with people as you hear what's going on in their lives. And as you work through those things together, as you share life, as you talk about what's going on with your kids, and you talk about what's going on with the elderly parent that you're caring for, you talk about your challenges at work, it begins to transform you because you're with this group of people that all see the world the same way, which is we all need Christ. And so it's a continuing work. Just a couple of quotes that are too small for me to read right now. So the Scarboroughs said, "Our group went from being a group we hardly knew to a group of close friends with whom we have shared many life events. Over the years, as people have come and gone, the relaxed atmosphere has made it comfortable for visitors and friends to feel welcome and want to be a part of the group." The Myers said, "We're there for each other in good times and in challenging times. We look forward to our group activities." And the Sandovals said, "It's much easier to create personal bonds with our brothers and sisters in these smaller settings. We enjoy our home and hosting family. We laugh, we cry, we break bread, we worship our Lord, and we pray together. We love our life group." And y'all are... I guess I shouldn't admit it because, like, I'm a guy, right? But our life group met for the last time on March 18th. And I truly believe that this is something that needs to happen, that our group needs to multiply. It needs to lead other groups so that other people can enjoy that relationship. But it was so traumatic. Our meeting went an hour long because nobody wanted to leave because we knew that was the last time our group was meeting. It almost brings me to tears now. And these aren't people that I would have necessarily been friends with out in my life. I'm a good person at sneaking in, sitting about two rows from the back, and getting out of here before anybody can talk to me. I mean, but these folks have become so important to me that Robert Copeland and I, we shared tears over it. It was just a very trying time. So when you're in these groups, there's just a few guidelines. One is to give them priority. We want people to be there. You've got to be there for the groups to work. What happens in groups stays in group. And basically, people will get more comfortable sharing what's going on in their lives. And that's not juicy gossip to be spread around. You ask people to participate. Not everybody participates from day one. I mean, it takes time. We want to support each other. We want to be open and honest with each other. And then we want to be really good listeners and not give advice and not try to solve the problem unless somebody's looking for that. We want to just be support. So then what's the dream? Like, where are we trying to go? And this is video 5.
I want us to go back to the dream this morning. Let's go to Acts chapter 2. And let's look what happened in the first century. When a loose collection of people all of a sudden found themselves as Christians. Now, we say, well, we shouldn't have a big church. My goodness, guys, this was a church of 3,000 overnight. They've come from all over the world. They find themselves in Jerusalem. They become Christians, and what seems to happen is they hang out for a while. Now, what was that church like? I love this picture. I never cease to read these verses without getting excited. Let's start in verse 42, Acts chapter 2. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship and the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as he had need. Every day, they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke their bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Now, what a contrast. From the kind of society and the kind of churches that we build in America today, the kind of church we see back here. You see, my challenge for us today is for us to restore the closeness of that first century church. What was that church like? You know, I read these verses and I underline a few words. They were devoted. They were together. They were glad. They were sincere. They were praising God. I mean, that church was an exciting place to be. Man, those guys weren't loosely connected. They were a community. And they like each other so much, man, they're getting together every day. Man, they're opening their homes up and having a big time. And they're praising God. And because of that atmosphere, it seems almost natural, the church begins to grow. Now, here's the question. Number two, could it happen again? I mean, is it possible in our culture? Oh, I know we can't exactly duplicate the circumstances here. That's not what I'm asking for. But can we replicate the spirit and the unity and the relationships that made this church thrive? What would it take for us to once again restore church to that place of community? You see, friends, we can sit here and I can give you a lot more statistics about what's happened in our culture. And we can even get a little upset about that. Families don't live close together hardly at all. Neighborhoods aren't close. You don't even know the names of your neighbors. A lot of things have changed. And we could get really upset about that. Or, listen, we could say this may be the greatest opportunity God's people have ever had. Why? Because the church is the one organization on the face of the earth that's built on relationships. It's all about your relationship with God, and it's all about our relationships with each other.
When I watched that video the first time, I just kept replaying that end piece. Because he's right. We can get upset. We can wallow together and talk about how bad society is and how bad the culture is and how horrible it is that all these folks are lonely and outcast. Or we can see it for what it is, and God's put in front of us a wonderful opportunity, like you said. Relationships are what it's all about, and forming those relationships with other people. People are craving that these days. People need to feel important and wanted and cared for. And this congregation already is very good at that. I mean, Lord knows y'all shouldn't have wanted me, but you took me. So it's what it's about. So kind of the hard, not hard facts, but just the basic facts. We start meeting on April 8th. We'll be meeting at the building and in various homes. Like I said earlier, Sunday afternoons and evenings, and then the foundation of every group is fellowship, Bible study, and prayer. So now until April 4th, after Wednesday evening services, is kind of sign-up time. If you're old school, we've got tables in the foyer with clipboards, and you can sign your name. We also have a Connect Group flyer where you can just check the box and put your information there I think Courtney's got a collection box, but I should have found that out before I came in here. If you're up in tech savvy, there's a QR code on the bulletin. I don't know if y'all know this, but Android and iPhones, all you have to do is turn on your camera and point at the QR code. It's going to take you where you need to be. Two different websites. You can go to the church website, scroll down, there's a button that says Get Connected. There's also a website called leanderconnectgroups.com. So any of the websites are going to take you to this deal right here. You click on Get Connected. It'll bring up a map with the different groups. Click on any one of those circles, and a short blurb is going to come up on the group. And then if you click on it again, you'll get all the information on that group. Then there's a sign-up form right to the right side. So we've made it as easy and as we could. So y'all are going to have to listen to this twice, and I apologize for that. But why am I up here? Why did I get the distinct honor of being up here and being scared to death? I am really passionate about connect groups, and I'm going to try to explain it, and I'm not going to do a good job. 5 years ago, if you had called me in the middle of the night and you needed help, I would have gone, but I wouldn't have had anything nice to say about it at all. I was very much of the attitude of people have their stuff and people need to take care of their stuff, and it's not my stuff, they need to take care of it. But I can tell you honestly today, if anybody called, especially if anybody from the Connect groups that I've been involved with called, I'd be there in a heartbeat, and I'd be pleased and happy and honored that they thought to call me. It's a total change in the way my brain thinks. Some of y'all know I love to hug. It's my favorite thing in life. I think the idea of getting in a circle and holding hands is just the best idea ever when you pray. I'm kind of a little bit, strangely enough, can talk to a group, but I'm somewhat introverted, and I'm kind of very personal, and that translates to my home. Throughout the years, I haven't really, and if you're a Christian, you're not supposed to admit this, but I don't like having you guys over. I really don't. It's just not in me. I do not have the gift of hospitality. I'm like, this is my house, it's my safe place, this is my abode. And this carries through to my family. When we go to visit family out of town, I stay in a hotel. And when they come to see me, I expect them to do the same thing. But I was telling Courtney here, about a month ago, we've always had her parents and my parents as kind of our safety net in life. But I've never felt like we really had anybody else. But what I can say at this point is I know half a dozen people that if we were down and out, wouldn't hesitate to let me stay at their house with my family. But what the real change is, and gets me a little broken up, the real change is I wouldn't hesitate to have them stay at my house. And that's a huge difference for me. It's totally transformed the way I look at things. So I encourage everyone, give it a shot, get involved. We understand that people are at different places. Don't feel bad about coming to a group and go a different one that meets your needs. I mean, it's not a forced thing. It's not we want you to dread it. It's something that hopefully if you're connecting with the right people, that you'll enjoy going to and look forward to. And the last thing I'll say about me is, so on and off through the years, I've either been extremely committed or not so committed. But, there's times that I just have to force myself to go to this service or that service. Don't particularly want to be there. But here a couple of weeks ago, I was pretty sick. And in the old days, I would use that as an excuse not to do anything. Life group tonight. And I said, yeah, I want to see my friends. Relate enough how transformational these groups have been. So if I have any questions, you can talk to me or any of the committee members, or if you have a complaint, talk to an elder. So thank y'all. I think we're about done.